Welcome to Akhotra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akhotra AI. Welcome to this deep dive. Today we're opening up a truly foundational work of 20th century literature, Naguib Mahfouz's incredible novel, Palace Walk.
Oh, it's absolutely essential. Bayn al-Qasrayn in Arabic, which means between the two palaces. And yeah, it's the first volume of Mahfouz's huge Cairo trilogy, published back in 1956. It's intense, quite claustrophobic.
And Mahfouz himself, I mean, what a literary giant. People rightly call him the father of the modern Arabic novel.
Definitely.
His writing, you know, that social realism is just so meticulous. It earned him the Nobel Prize in 88.
Yeah, the only Arab writer to get it. His focus was always Cairo, wasn't it? Chronicling its soul, exploring these big themes, existentialism, tradition versus modernity, social shifts.
Exactly. And the setting for Palace Walk is critical. We're talking Cairo, 1917 to 1919.
Right. A real pressure cooker of a time. The Ottoman influence is waning, and you can feel the nationalism simmering, building up to the 1919 Egyptian revolution against the British occupation.
So our mission today, for you listening, is really to unpack how this story, this intimate family saga, works as this powerful allegory for Egypt itself at that crossroads.
Yeah, the sources really suggest that the old ways, those rigid family structures, are starting to buckle precisely because the outside world is changing so drastically.
And it all centers on one household, doesn't it? The Al-Jawad family in the Gamalia district.
That's right. Mahfouz paints this picture of a world that's almost hermetically sealed. And it's completely dominated by the patriarch, Al-Sayyid Ahmad Abd al-Jawad.
He sounds like, well, a tyrant, basically.
Oops,
unquestionable authority, demanding total obedience.
Totally. And for the women, his wife Amina, his daughters, his rule means strict confinement. They literally cannot leave the house. They exist purely in that domestic space, terrified of his anger.
But here's the core conflict, the thing that drives so much of the tension.
Yeah.
His breathtaking hypocrisy.
Exactly. It's destructive. By day, he's all piety and honor. But at night, he slips out. Becomes this charming, you know, bon vivant, music, drinking, affairs.
The sheer contrast is stunning. How does he justify it? I mean, if he's supposedly protecting the family's honor.
Well, in his mind, the home and the outside world are entirely separate spheres. The home is for virtue, for protection, so it needs strict control. The outside, that's where men indulge. He seems to believe his actions out there don't touch the family's honor inside the house.
Well.
And it's interesting, his strictness isn't portrayed as purely cruel. He genuinely seems to see it as protecting them, upholding their status. It kind of mirrors that colonial mindset, you know, we rule you for your own good.
Which makes the house such a perfect microcosm. You've got this external authoritarian rule of the British occupation, mirrored by this internal self-imposed tyranny built on secrets and contradictions.
Right. And the question Mahfouz keeps posing is, how long can something built on that kind of lie actually hold up?
So, to see where the cracks appear, we have to look at the people living under this rule. Let's start with Amina, the mother.
Amina. She's really the archetype of the subjugated wife.
Hmm.
Pious, so timid, hasn't left the house in, what, 25 years?
25 years. Incredible.
Her life is just this quiet endurance, the suffering. But, and this is key, she also has this deep, almost devotional fear and respect for her husband. Mahfouz really captures that complexity, that devotion under duress.
And that system, that hypocrisy, it starts to ripple through the next generation too, right? Like Yassin, the eldest son.
Oh, Yassin is such a tragic figure. He basically inherits his father's hidden desires, that duality.
But without the control.
Exactly. None of the discipline or the charm that lets his father get away with it. Yassin is just reckless, impulsive. That incident where he tries to molest the servant girl, it's a huge scandal.
He's like the system's flaws made manifest, the vice without the veneer of respectability.
Perfectly put. He's caught in the cycle of scandal and then forced consequences, like his arranged marriage. It shows how those flaws get passed down.
And the daughters, Khadija and Aisha. Their options seem so limited.
Terribly limited. Their whole lives pivot on who they'll marry. Khadija is the sharp-tongued, practical one. Maybe the only one who subtly pushes back a bit.
Yeah, Aisha.
Aisha is the beautiful, dreamy one. Their only way out, or rather, their only path forward is marriage. It's a transaction.
But then there's Kamal, the youngest.
Mm.
He seems crucial.
Absolutely crucial, especially for the later books in the trilogy. Here, he's the observer, the innocent eyes watching everything, the secrets, the fear, the tension. He's taking it all in.
So he's soaking up this atmosphere of tyranny.
Yes, and his intellectual journey really starts here, witnessing it all. It sets him up to be the one who grapples with the meaning of it later on.
Okay, so the novel starts with this very ritualistic feel, mirroring that daily grind, everything dictated by Ahmad's presence or absence.
Right, the tension of the day, then that little window of, well, not freedom exactly, but release when he's out at night. It feels like an unbreakable cycle.
Until Amina breaks it, that one act.
Ah, yes. Amina's trip to the shrine of al-Hussein, it's monumental. She sneaks out, driven by her piety, wanting to connect with something outside the house walls, an act strictly forbidden.
And it ends badly. She gets hurt.
Yes, she's hit by a car, not seriously, but enough that her secret's out. And I'll say it, Aman's reaction, it's not worry. It's pure cold rage.
At the disobedience.
His authority has been challenged. His punishment is instant and brutal. He banishes her, sends her back to her mother's house.
Just for going to pray.
Just for stepping outside his control. It's a stark symbol, isn't it? The danger of even the smallest step towards personal freedom in that world. It's the first major crack in his absolute power. It shows how fragile that control really is.
The family has to regroup after that. Eunice's scandal gets papered over with a forced marriage.
Right. And then the big shift, Khadija and Aisha both get married to the Shakat brothers.
So the house starts to empty out, but the family's world also expands a bit.
Exactly. Through the in-laws, they're exposed to slightly more modern ideas. But when Amina eventually comes back, humiliated, the house feels even quieter, emptier for her.
And just as things are shifting internally, the outside world, the political situation, really forces its way in.
Yes, the focus shifts more towards Fahmy, the idealistic son studying law. He's the political heart of this novel.
The new generation, fired up by nationalism, wanting independence.
Completely, and that puts him on a direct collision course with his father's conservatism, his caution.
Fahmy gets involved, actively involved.
He does. He starts printing revolutionary pamphlets secretly. The tension builds until the 1919 revolution erupts, and Fahmy has to choose.
Father or country.
Filial duty versus national duty. He confronts his father, openly defies him, declares his loyalty is to Egypt now.
That's a huge moment, the ultimate act of defiance in that household.
It really is. You see the contrast. Amina's small personal act led to punishment. Fahmy's large public act is tied to this national uprising. There's this brief moment of hope, of euphoria, when the nationalist leader Zagulo is released.
Fahmy's seen as a hero then.
For a moment, yes. He comes home vindicated. It seems like his idealism won.
But Mahfouz doesn't let it rest there?
No. Tragedy strikes. Fahmy insists on joining one more protest despite the danger. And he's shot. Killed by British soldiers.
Devastating, after everything.
It just shatters the family. Al-Sayed Ahmad is broken. His absolute authority, the thing he built his entire life around, suddenly seems utterly meaningless in the face of this loss, these larger forces.
And Amina, how does she react?
In her grief, something breaks open. Amina, the quiet, submissive wife, finally finds her voice. She just unleashes decades of pent-up anger and pain at her husband.
Rebellion born of grief.
A powerful, raw moment, even if it's temporary. But then, Mahfouz shows us. Life, in a way, goes on. The cycle continues quietly. Khadija has her baby. Aisha's pregnant.
So the family line continues, but everything's changed, haunted by Fahmy's death.
Exactly. The foundation is cracked. The traditional world feels fragile now.
Let's try to unpack some of those core themes then.
Yeah.
Patriarchy and hypocrisy are obviously central. Ahmad's split life.
It's a critique of the whole system, really. That rigid separation virtue supposedly inside the home, indulgence outside it, forces everyone into hiding things, living in fear.
Creating that intense claustrophobic feeling.
Yeah, Mahfouz shows how repression, whether it's in the home or by the state, creates this double life, this double consciousness. So the search for freedom becomes the main driver for nearly everyone.
And the cost is so high, Fahmy pays with his life fighting for national freedom.
While Amina's tiny quest for personal freedom, just a walk outside, brings immediate harsh punishment, Mahfouz really underscores the immense sacrifice needed just to challenge the status quo.
What about the symbolism? The house itself?
It's brilliantly done. The house is both sanctuary and prison, and those mashrabiyas, the latticed window screens, they're perfect symbols for the women's position. They can look out, see the world, but they can't be seen, can't participate. They're detached observers.
That's powerful. And the whole structure of day versus night.
It organizes the whole narrative, doesn't it? Day is order, control, piety, the public face. Night is chaos, indulgence, Ahmad's secret freedom, the hidden truth. It just lays bare the moral emptiness at the core.
And the way Mahfouz tells it, that third-person omniscient view, we get inside everyone's head.
Crucial. That's why it feels so complete. We hear Amina's prayers, Fami's passionate thoughts, even Ahmad's own justifications for his tyranny. It gives it this almost documentary feel, this incredibly rich psychological depth.
You really can't escape that feeling of being trapped or the sense of injustice, and the fact that it's the young idealists, like Fami, who pay the price first for change. That feels very real.
It does. The novel just stays with you. Its power, I think, is how it makes you question if these cycles of repression, familial or political, can ever really be broken without someone paying the ultimate price.
Yeah, it's a timeless question. Does the quest for change always demand sacrifice?
It seems to suggest that.
And it leaves you wondering about Ahmad, too. The novel implies that denying freedom to others means you're not truly free yourself. What was the real cost to him for all those years of control? Does losing Fami somehow break his own chains? Or just leave him empty in the prison he built?
That's a really provocative thought to end on. What did his tyranny ultimately cost him?
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.